This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, 60 minutes of old-time radio crime brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. We'll start off this week with Broadway Is My Beat and the David Blaine murder case. This one aired July 22, 1951. After that, it's Michael Shane, private detective, and the Newton murder case. That story aired April 2, 1945.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you chewing enjoyment, presents for your listening enjoyment...
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, the thrilling drama of murder and mystery and the people who walk the Great White Way, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. For refreshment while you work, for enjoyment anytime, chew a stick of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. The delicious, long-lasting, real mint flavor of Wrigley's Spearmint cools your mouth and freshens your taste. The good, smooth chewing helps keep you feeling fresh and alert, adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. So indoors, outdoors, at work or play, enjoy chewing Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Wrigley's Spearmint. Refreshing. Delicious.
In July, the night slips down over Broadway like a black silk stocking, and you drift to it because the other promises you made to yourself never happen. The part of your life that never counted is left behind, and you stand on a street corner beating down the scream in your throat. The shadows start at 7 o'clock and deepen into night. You hug it close because it's your chance that something will happen to you outside of the movies. And the tap on the shoulder starts it, or the laughter that floats down to your end of the bar, or a smile, or the man who runs down the hall after you.
Danny! Hey, Danny.
What's the matter, Sergeant?
Glad I nabbed you before you took off for the day. Phone call, Danny, from a hysterical woman. You know, I had a hard time piecing it all. 1647 East 56, Danny, fourth floor apartment. That's where her fiancé lives. The guy's threatening to blow his brains out. Here, the names and such I jotted on this paper.
Squad car, Gino.
Waiting for you downstairs. Muggerman's with it.
That's it, Danny, 1647. Who'd you say was doing all this threatening?
A man by the name of Blaine. First name is, let's see, David. Try the buzzer, Muggerman.
Yeah.
He did it. Miss Carroll said he was going to do it, and he
did. We're from the police.
It happened up there on the fourth floor. Mr. Blaine, it happened just now, not more than...
Who's that crying?
That's her, Miss Carroll. See her? See her? Hugging the banister up on the third floor landing. And that's Mr. Fallon at the rail on the second
floor. Let's go, Muggerman. Dead.
The gun's here, Danny, by his chair. It's brand new.
Looks like Mr. Blaine had his choice.
Uh-huh. It's quite a gun collection, from derringers on up. Complete equipment for a young arsenal.
Muggerman.
Yeah?
Those people we passed on the landing, that boy on the second floor, Mr. Fallon, and Miss Carroll on the third, I'll want to talk to them.
Yeah, Miss Carroll's still crying, Danny. You hear her? Poor woman.
And stand for a moment and consider the virulence of death. How it is not content with its own, must reach out to slash the livid scar into the heart of those crowding its edge. The woman crying softly. The other tenants whispering, moving restlessly in the lower corridors, and then hugging the wall because the attendants on violence must pass. The photographers, the interns, the technicians. And the moment is gone. It's routine now, official. The first entry in the file of night. The next morning, gather it into a neat stack on your desk and sit down to it, and be surprised at the opening door and the quick presence of the woman you had marked for later interrogation.
The man who was with you last night, he said you wanted to talk to me.
It could have waited, Miss Carroll, until you felt better and until you...
It'll not be forgotten that easily, Mr. Clover, if that's what you mean. If you have something to ask, ask. Only don't prolong it. Don't make me wait and wonder. Sorrow's enough by itself, don't you think?
Yes, yes, it is. And you, try to understand us, Miss Carroll.
A man I loved, who loved me, is dead. By his own hand, by his own will. He could have lifted his burden onto me, whatever it was. But he didn't. And now he's dead. You want more than that?
Maybe. Because this is my job. Because I can't rule out the possibility that David Blaine was murdered.
Awful. How ugly of you to think a thing like that. That anyone could have wanted my David dead. What if it's ugly?
Tell me about him.
He loved me. He was going to marry me. He was polite, gentle. Sometimes he'd forget himself. Then he'd beg my forgiveness. Wept sometimes. Showered me with gifts, so I'd be quicker to forgive. This watch, he called it an engagement present, but it was really an atonement for... Look at it. See how he loved me.
It's a beautiful watch, Miss Carroll.
See? Listen to it. And it ticks, ticks, ticks away my life with David, softly, gently.
Listen to me, Miss Carroll. Why would David kill himself? You were in love, you were going to be married. Why?
He had a secret. That's it. He had a secret. He didn't want to stain me with it. Isn't that it, Mr. Clover? Isn't that why a man kills himself for the girl he loves?
Oh, I'm sorry, Danny. I thought... But it's important...
It's all right, Dr. Sinsky. You can come in. Well, that'll be all for now, Miss Carroll. Thank you.
All?
You helped a great deal. Thank you.
You have nothing more?
Nothing. Not now.
Then I'll go. If you should want to talk to me again, I promise I'll be... Goodbye.
It's not easy, huh, Danny? To pry into grief, to scavenge...
You've got something, Doctor. Just tell me.
Oh, forgive me, Danny. Sometimes my mouth gets the better of me. I studied it, Danny. I put it on your desk for you to study. Read it sideways, upside down, still comes out suicide.
Then it's done. Finished, huh? Nothing to bother our brains about.
Like you say, Danny, finished. Except when a man who dies as Blaine did in shock spasm, arms rigid at right angles to his body, fingers clenched, how is it the gun was not found in his hand but on the floor? It's just a small question, Danny, to gnaw at the brain of a medical man. Sometimes it happens so, but...
Yeah. Go practice medicine, Doctor. Maybe I can bring you back an answer. Maybe where a man died, someone has an answer.
I'm busy right now.
Your name, Richard Fallon? I'm from the police.
I guess that gives you a right. Come on in. You want to sit? Over there. Move those papers off the couch. Just put them on the floor.
You a writer, Fallon?
You interested or curious?
What do you write about?
About your city? About how it's not like my part of the country? About your many-faceted city? About your stinking city? Your people? Your small people, your hurry-up people, your no-place-to-go people. The no-tears city, the rat-hole city. That's what I write about.
Any material up on the fourth floor?
I figured that'd be your gambit. Uh-uh, nothing. Your city caught up with a man and he shot himself before it drowned him. I'll think about the man and smile and wish him well.
Know anything about him?
His name was David Blaine. He walked arm-in-arm with a third-floor woman, Miss Carroll. Last night I heard a shot. I ran out into the hall. Mrs. Galvin downstairs ran out into the hall. Miss Carroll upstairs ran out into the hall. We looked up the stairwell to the fourth floor from where the shot came. David Blaine was dead. I know that about him.
What else?
Uh-uh. Nothing. Sit there if you want, but don't stare at the back of my neck when I write. It makes me self-conscious.
My gratitude for permitting me my 10 minutes at the water cooler, Danny.
Feel better, Gino?
Goes without saying. And now to the toils of the day. It comes to that part of the rundown in which I proffer you your daily piece of resistance in two parts. To wit, gun found at side of deceased David Blaine is indeed gun with which deceased did do himself in.
Now, Gino, that hasn't been...
Patience, Danny. Part two will settle the question itching in your brain of suicide versus murder.
Scratch it for me, Gino.
Delighted. Part two of report from technical states, impossible for any tenant to have shot said deceased, make an escape down the fire escape, arrived in the hallways in time to look up and yell, man dead on the fourth floor in your presence. Add to this the double whammy I have held out on you.
Give it to me, Tartaglia.
Piques you, huh, Danny? The legman assigned to such duty I've come up with that David Blaine did indeed lose upwards to 50 grand by sour bets in the stock market. This in the period of the last month. 50 grand in 30 days. For this, guys killed themselves, Danny. For a lot less sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, Gino, close the file on Blaine. There's nothing more to... Danny Clover speaking.
They switched me to you. You the man on that Blaine thing?
Yes. What about it? Who are you?
Blanche Hemby, mister. 1834 East 59, room 11.
You said Blaine. What have you got?
What have I got? I got he was murdered, mister.
And go there, and walk the hallway mottled with shadows and scuffings, the short corridor that ends in the door with the tin numbers and the pull-down bed and the basin in the corner. Knock on door 11 and get no answer. And go in, because there was urgency in the voice that said, come here. And the bed was pulled down, the rug was frayed, and the splotch of blood trailed off it onto the floor. The girl was behind the couch, huddled, her knees drawn to her chest, and only the fat summer fly pinging against the window made sound. That and the lonely room silences that intruded upon the dead girl. The murdered girl.
For refreshment while you work, for enjoyment anytime, chew a stick of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. When your mouth feels dry, when you're warm or tired, Wrigley's Spearmint is really refreshing. The lively, full-bodied, real mint flavor cools your mouth, moistens your throat, freshens your taste. And the chewing itself gives you a little lift, helps you feel your best and do your best. So for chewing enjoyment plus pleasant refreshment, chew delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. We now continue with Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
In the glittering midsummer's day, Broadway takes time out to shimmer. The chrome is polished high, the better to reflect the passage of women who lean for a moment against the summer's heat and then walk slowly on. The mouthpieces of the payphones glisten with the moist whispers of an empty summer afternoon. A money clip glints through the dark of an alley, and you know that someone has gotten odds on a piece of the day. There's the drone of the neon and the tired wind nudging a headline in a shining trash bin. Cop finds murdered girl in tenement room, and the wet shirt pulled from your back. Like other summers, other days... Where I was, in the corridor between my office and the show-up room, that had happened before, too. Only the names of the dead were different.
Blanche Hemby. I got the rundown on her you wanted, Danny.
What'd you get, Muggerman?
Oh, I'll have to slice it off fast, Danny. I'm due at the show-up. A woman there, a Mrs. Westfall, real eager to identify a prowler she dreamed last night.
I'll walk you down.
This girl, Blanche Hemby, frequent visitor.
Hmm?
Got her name on her guest book maybe 5 times.
For what?
Oh, nothing sensational. Brawl over a hairdo with another dame in a bar. Phonograph screaming. Her screaming, disturbing the neighbors. beat a guy's head open with a bottle because he called her a gimme gimme girl, things like that.
Any tie-up with David Blaine?
I noticed around the bars where she had the trouble, the tenement where she lived, the place she was working at 2 weeks ago.
They fired her?
No, she gave notice, Danny, 2 weeks ago. Said she was sick and tired working for nickel tips behind a hamburger counter. She had better, she told him, a lot better. Bit a hole in her time card, threw it on the griddle, walked out.
Work anywhere else? See anyone else?
No, I checked that, too. Blanche slept away the days in her room. Three times a day she got up to phone for beer, once a day for sandwiches. Here I am. I'll check with you later, Danny.
Yeah.
How do I know where I got it? Why don't you leave me alone?
Muggerman.
Stop making a show.
That kid up there.
What about him, Danny? Some punk, probably.
That's the boy who was the tenant on the second floor where Blaine was murdered. Get him, Muggerman. Bring him up to my office.
Sure, Danny, right away. There he is, Danny. He's not anxious.
Get your hands off me. You're scum, all of you.
Take it easy, kid. What happened? The city trying to drown you the way you said it does to people?
I hate it. I get drunk at night because I hate it. That way I see it for what it is. And you can't stand that when someone like me sees you for what you are. You hate me. And you kick me, you throw me in jail because I'm better. Even drunk, I'm better.
He's right, Danny. He's a lot better than us. He goes around with a pocket full of watch, like this, because he's so much better.
I see it. Where'd you get this watch, Richard?
I held out my hand and I begged, and a kindly person dropped it right into my begging hand.
Where'd you get it?
I told you. I walked the streets and it fell into my hand because I was crying and lonely. And sick for home.
Miss Carroll, your neighbor has a watch like this. You steal it from her? You steal it, Richard? Lock him up, Muggerman. A watch exactly like the one Regina Carroll owned. Her engagement present from the man now dead, presumed a suicide, suspected murdered. If it were Miss Carroll's watch, what was Richard Fallon doing with it? It was a simple question, and Richard couldn't answer it. So call Miss Carroll. Get no answer. So open the plush box that held the watch. Levanti, jewelers for over a century. That's what the satin ribbon said, glued against the inside top. Stolen from Levanti, jewelers for over a century? Go there. Ask Mr. Levanti.
Oh, no, not stolen. Purchased.
By whom?
A policeman, you said you were. Let me see, please.
Sure. Here.
Yes. This watch was purchased.
You've already said that.
Apologies. I'm temporizing, you see. I'm trying to gather my forces together. Now, as to who purchased this watch, perhaps to a Miss Carroll, my old friend, Miss Regina Carroll. Of course, it's impossible to tell.
What are you trying to tell me, Mr. Levant?
You see, this is quite an unusual watch. We rarely sell more than one a year. Our own design with a foreign mechanism. However, we sold two in the last few months. Remarkable?
Who did you sell them to?
Even more remarkable. A few days ago, Miss Carroll purchased such a watch. A few months ago, a fiancé. Now dead, I've heard. A few months ago, this gentleman also purchased such a watch as an engagement gift for Miss Carroll.
That makes two watches for Miss Carroll, both the same kind. Is there an explanation for it, Mr. Levanti?
Well, Miss Carroll said she lost her engagement watch. Thus, she purchased another one. She cautioned me not to mention it to her fiancé. Or to anyone, for that matter. But now, you, a policeman, Mr. Blaine, dead. Well, you don't think I'm going back on my word to an old friend, do you?
Miss Carroll is your old friend?
Her dad and I were close. I tuddled Regina. Poor woman.
You mean about her fiancé?
About all of them.
What do you mean?
There were four of them, you know. Two at college, one when she was a sophomore, one when she was a senior. Then about 10 years ago, a young man, since quite successful in groceries, has a nice store for select customers on Madison. Chap named Mason, I think.
Miss Carroll was engaged four times, huh?
She's 37, you know. She doesn't look it, does she? Still a beauty. A bygone day kind of beauty, if you know what I mean. Victorian, would that be it? Oh, I often wondered why she never married any of her young men, why they backed out on their marriage.
I wonder why, too.
Hello? You need some help, sir?
I'm looking for a Mr. Mason.
All right, I'm Mason.
I'm Danny Clover, police.
The first name's Pete, Danny.
You got a couple of minutes?
Any time for you, fellas. I need a couple of minutes to recuperate anyhow. Mrs. Smythe just had me on the floor.
Oh?
She comes in here with her French poodles, three on a leash. Maid and chauffeur trailing in back. Orders a dozen... Well, did you ever hear anybody say bagel with a broad A? She wants a dozen boggles. I don't understand her. Finally, she tells me what she wants is receptacles for a delicacy known as lox.
How did she say lox?
Lox, the chauffeur said. What can I do for you, Danny?
You were once engaged to a Regina Carroll, weren't you?
It was an experience. I'm not sorry for it.
Who broke the engagement?
You've got to ask that because it's important for the police to know, right, Danny? I broke it.
Why?
Why? That's a question I often ask myself. Sometimes my wife asks me. And I'll tell you what I answer.
Go ahead.
Regina was a girl just like the girl that married dear old Dad. Close to the wedding, I discovered this is not the type of girl I wanted. Personally, the girl that married my dear old Dad, my mom, nagged my father to an early grave. Mom and Regina, two peas from the same pod.
Go on.
I'll tell you about Regina. I figure she has a picture in her head of a husband in a smoking jacket with satin lapels and a curved pipe in a fireplace. I don't fit the requirements. Personally, I like polka better than cribbage.
Uh-huh. What else?
Well, Regina, how she dressed. Pretty, you understand. But she made her own fashions, which she never changed. Ribbons, dresses choked against the throat, and always a little too long. She slipped on the ice once, and I told her she had pretty legs. She slapped me. That's what about Regina Carroll, Danny? That enough?
Plenty. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Gordon?
Danny Clover. I couldn't be more charmed if I tried.
A quiet evening in Technical, huh, Gordon?
It was. Now the place screeches at me. Did you do that, Danny, just by walking in here?
You mix yourself bitter pills in those test tubes?
I don't have to. I have company. No offense.
The gun that killed David Blaine. Get it out. Go over it again.
Well, I've already examined it thoroughly. My report was placed on your desk.
Get it out.
Well, I can recall it to you if memory fails you. .32 caliber, Smith & Wesson. Fired once.
Get it. Examine it.
All right. All right, Danny. See? I'm examining. It's still as it was when Blaine held it close to him.
The barrel. Put it on a slide. Hold it up to the light, whatever you have to do.
If you ask, Danny, I'll do better. Perhaps this will amuse you. The spectromicrograph enlarges 45 times. And there. Have a look, Danny?
You look.
All right, Danny, all right. Wow.
What?
These infinitesimal scratch marks on the barrel. Fascinating. And a new quirk. It didn't register on me before. I checked the rifling in the barrel against the slug, which we call standard operating procedure. I didn't think of looking at the outside of the barrel. Why should I with a suicide? I guess I should have, eh?
And what would you have found out, Gordon?
That the man killed himself with a silencer on his weapon. Now, that's what I call taking quiet pleas a shade too far, huh, Danny?
Oh, Mr. Clover, I knew you'd come back. Knew there'd be more things you'd want to know about David. Did you come in?
Thanks.
You may sit down, that chair.
No, thanks. What makes you think I wanted to find out any more about David?
I assumed it. Suicide. Files to complete. I realize it's my duty to be cooperative.
Miss Carroll...
I can tell you so much about him. He was generous. He was a gentleman. Rare thing to find nowadays.
He was murdered.
You suggested that before, Mr. Clover. I didn't believe it then. I don't believe it now.
Murdered. He was dead minutes before we got to him.
Oh, that's stupid.
Listen to me, Miss Carroll.
Stupid, because I heard the shot. We all heard it. We all ran out into the hall.
Do you have a gun, Miss Carroll?
Yes, I have a gun. David gave it to me. Woman alone.
Did he show you how to fire it?
Of course he did. He loved guns. I interested myself in them. Shall I get the gun?
It isn't necessary for now. You don't have to get the silencer either.
What are you talking about?
The gun you shot David with, his own gun, was equipped with a silencer.
Mr. Clover, I don't understand you at all. I'm a lonely woman. And I admit it, I'm a helpless one. How could I have killed anyone? Someone I loved.
Nice view from this window, Miss Carroll. You could stand here, see Detective Mugovan and me coming, fire a blank cartridge from your gun, run out into the hall. Look up, and everyone thinks the shot came from the floor above, from David Blaine's apartment.
Mr. Clover.
Do you admit it, Miss Carroll?
No. No.
I want to show you something. Here. Look at it, Miss Carroll, a watch, just like the one you're wearing.
I didn't kill him.
David Blaine broke his engagement to you, didn't he?
I didn't kill him.
The kind of woman you are, proper and proud. You gave him back the watch. But what to tell your friends? Tell them that someone else walked out on you the way three other men did? A proud woman like you? So you bought another watch, just like it. The one you're wearing.
Please, please.
Because I have the one you gave back to David. The watch you had that boy, that writer, Richard Fallon, steal from David's apartment. So the police wouldn't find it there and ask questions. You told him to get rid of the watch. He got drunk instead, got picked up.
Look, look. David jilted me. I didn't kill him.
You did. You couldn't live with the thought of another man's walking out on you, like the other three. That's why you bought the watch, so your friends would think you were still engaged.
Mr. Clover.
So your friends would think David died because of the money he lost. And Blanche Hemby, the reason why David walked out on you.
Filth.
The woman David loved.
Filth!
Beat her to death.
Beat her!
Let's go, Miss.
Like David, here is filth. Instead of me, her, a woman like that.
Miss Carroll.
It's not true what you said. Those men didn't turn me down. I turned them down. College boys. A grocer. Not good enough. It isn't true. It isn't true. They did walk out. Why? Take me away. Put me someplace. I don't want to look at anyone. I can't look at anyone.
Broadway's deserted now. Maybe it's the heat. Maybe it's just that people get tired and want to go home because Broadway threw sand in their eyes. Maybe you found what you were looking for and couldn't stare it in the face because it's a street that'll give you anything you want, any way you want it. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Remember, friends, for refreshment while you work, for enjoyment anytime, chew a stick of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. There's lots of lively, real mint flavor in it to cool your mouth, freshen your taste, and sweeten your breath. And chewing Wrigley's Spearmint helps keep you fresh and alert. You feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. So indoors, outdoors, at work or play, always keep delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. For refreshment while you work, for chewing anytime, chew a stick of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum hope you've enjoyed tonight's story and that you're enjoying Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day. We invite you to join us next week at this time when Detective Danny Clover returns again with Broadway's My Beat. Broadway's My Beat, brought to you by Wrigley's Spearmint Gum, is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis with music composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. The program is written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin and stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Prussian as Mugovan. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Due to the illness of Wally Mayer, the part of Mike Shane will be played tonight by Edmund MacDonald in The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. The people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company, present The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis. It's a bright and sunny San Francisco afternoon. The sort of day you want to close up your office, say to heck with work, and go over the hill. Right now, Mike Shane and Phyllis Knight have closed their office and gone over the bay. But they can't say to heck with work. In fact, work is calling them to the Oakland Railroad Terminal. As they enter the depot, Phyllis looks at her wristwatch.
3:20. Mike, do you realize that train is 5 whole hours late?
I ought to. This makes our third trip across the bay to meet it. Watch out for these swinging doors.
Yeah.
Chicago, Des Moines, Denver, Salt Lake City on track 2.
Oh, it's in, all right. Here comes the Red Cast with the bags.
Hey, I'd still like to know why we had to come clear over here to the train to welcome Mr. Frank Hewitt Newton back to his own town.
I wouldn't know at the minute, Angel. 15-word telegram can't say much more than meet me at the depot, Pioneer Limited.
Plus that little business about a package he's sending you air express.
Something's wrong, and I guess he wants fast action on it.
Yeah.
Hey. There he is.
Where? Where?
Right ahead of us. Those two men and that red-headed gal.
Yeah.
Oh, glad to see you, Mr. Newton. Mr. Newton. Hey,
Mr. Newton?
It's me, Mike Shane.
Just looked right through us.
Well, maybe he didn't hear us.
Come on, we'll catch him at the taxi stand.
Okay. Excuse me. 40,000 people in our way.
Excuse me, sir. This way, Phil. Hurry, come on.
Yeah. They're outside already, Mike.
There he is. Getting into that sedan with the others.
Well, run for it, Mike. Run!
Oh, Mr. Newton! Mr. Newton! Mr. Newton!
Save your lungs. Save your lungs, Mike. He's gone.
Oh, for the love of...
You know, he's got a real cute sense of humor, hasn't he? 3 trips across the bay to glad hand a guy, and he gives you the glassy stare.
Yeah. Maybe it ain't from humor. Let's head back to the office. I want to do some phoning. Hello. This is Mike Shane calling. Mr. Newton in? No, he got back a half an hour ago. He wired me to meet him at the Oakland Depot, but something went wrong. Oh, you're Mrs. Newton? Yeah, that's right. Mike Shane, the detective. I don't know. I got his telegram from Reno telling me to meet him at the train. Yeah, it was sent from Reno. Well, if I knew, I'd tell you, Mrs. Newton. You haven't phoned me. Oh, thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Oh, so friend husband didn't tell the missus he was arriving home today.
Guess not. She thought he was still in Chicago. Awfully curious why he was hiring Mike Shane, the detective.
That makes 3 of us. Mm. Where's that telegram? I want to read it again.
Here, on the desk.
Thanks. Reno, 11:10 p.m., sending package Air Express, hold for me, stop. Meet me Oakland Depot tomorrow, Pioneer Limited, Frank Hewitt Newton. Oh, he must have gotten off the train to send the mysterious package. But why?
To make little girls ask big questions.
Smarty.
So far, the score's 00. No package, no client. I'll get it. Mike Shane speaking. Mr. Newton. Say, what went wrong? We went over to the depot. We saw you, hollered at you, chased after you. Huh? Yeah. Yeah, well, all right, but it seemed funny. Well, no, it hasn't. Where? Fairfax Hotel. Well, sure, if it comes before we close the office. Room 911. Yeah, okay. But would you not mind telling me what it's all about? Hello? Hello, Mr. Newton. Hello? Hello? Oh, he hung up on me.
Well, did he tell you why he gave us the fast runaround?
Oh, he says he'll explain later. Wants me to bring the express package to him at the Fairfax Hotel when it comes.
Well, it sounds to me like he's dodging the sheriff or bill collectors.
It sounds pretty worried to me. He's dodging something or... But what?
Or who?
You're Mr. Shane?
That's right. Something we can do for you?
I'm Mrs. Frank Newton.
Oh. We talked on the phone.
Won't you have a chair, Mrs. Newton?
I've come here, Mr. Shane, to find out exactly why my husband hired you.
I'm afraid you know as much about it as I do, Mrs. Newton.
In other words, you won't tell. It's about me.
Mr. Shane isn't in the habit of lying, Mrs. Newton. We do not know.
We think it has something to do with a package which your husband sent to us.
A package?
Yes, an air express from Reno.
He phoned a few minutes ago from the Fairfax Hotel. I'm to deliver it to him there. That's all I know.
Fairfax Hotel? Well, I'll see about that right now.
Well, that lady better watch her blood pressure.
This is a divorce case. I'm getting out of it. Yet somehow it doesn't smell like one.
Hey. Hey, Mike. Now, where are you going?
Fairfax Hotel. I'm going to find out what this hoopla is all about. I'll see you later.
Oh, fine. Fine. Now, all I got to do is sit here and just go crazy. I write letters, which is worse.
Hi there, Phyllis. Phyllis.
If you want to see Mike, Inspector, you missed him by 15 seconds.
You must have gone down the other hall. You mind if I sit down?
Just make yourself comfortable.
Thanks.
You're just in time to see me go nuts.
Huh?
Batty. Telegrams, trains late, phone calls, people tearing in and out. Oh, there, you see? See what I did? See?
Air Express for Mr. Michael Shane.
Air... This is it. It's come. Let me see it.
Take it easy, lady. I just want you to sign.
Yeah, sure, sure. The receipt. I'll sign it. Here. Here. Like that?
Thanks. You're welcome, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Phil, what's gotten into you? Where's the package? What's the package? What is
it
all about?
It's no bigger than a small book. It doesn't even weigh as much. But this is the dear little darling that's got a skagger.
Will you let me have that again?
Thursday, we got a telegram. Sending you package air express. Hold for me. Walked right past us at the train. Wants it delivered to the hotel. Wife says it's hers. And Faraday, have you got an aspirin? Oh.
Relax me, gal. I'll get it. Mike Shane's office. Huh? Oh, no. Where? Market and Geary. Right away.
Faraday, what's the matter? What's wrong?
Phil.
What? What is it?
Mike's been hurt. Bad.
In just a moment, we'll rejoin Mike Shane and his assistant Phyllis in their adventures. Regular lubrication for your car is, of course, most important, but proper lubrication is even more so. If your car is carelessly or hurriedly greased, important fittings may be missed or left dry. That is why Union Oil's Stop Wear Lubrication means extra insurance against mechanical wear and depreciation. Stop Wear Lubrication jobs are a matter of pride with the Union Oil Minutemen. Only the finest high-quality greases are used. Each fitting is carefully and thoroughly lubricated according to the manufacturer's specifications. While your car is on the hoist, the Minutemen inspect out-of-sight points and check them for danger signs. Stop Wear Lubrication is so accurate and scientific that you receive a written guarantee with each job, which is definite proof of reliable service. Your car will roll smoother, handle easier, stand up better with Stop Wear Lubrication. So, ladies and gentlemen, for guaranteed, reliable lubrication, ask your Union Oil Minuteman for Stop Wear. Stop Wear is an exclusive process. Available only at Union Oil Minuteman stations. Phyllis and Inspector Faraday have reached the intersection of Market and Geary Streets where Mike was reported badly hurt.
I'm scared. I'm scared, Faraday. I'm just scared sick. If Mike is hurt so bad
that he... I know what you mean, but where is he? There's no crowd, no ambulance.
Well, maybe they've taken him to the hospital.
Perhaps. Let's ask that traffic officer over there.
He's just got to be all right. He's the best boss, the best guy who ever lived.
Officer. Officer.
Yes, sir?
Did the ambulance take the man who was injured here a few minutes ago?
What man?
Mike Shane, my boss, the best guy who... He was run over.
Not on my corner. Ain't been even a dented fender around here all day.
But they said Market and Geary. They said he... They said... Oh.
Yeah. A phony call. Somebody wanted you out of your office.
Oh, I have been a dope. They wanted that package. We've got to get back, Faraday.
Too late now.
I've lost it. Mike was to deliver it to the Fairfax Hotel. What'll he do to me?
I'm curious. Let's pick him up at the hotel and find out.
Bill, Faraday, what are you two doing here?
Looking for Mike Shane, Lothario of the hotel lobby.
Oh, golly, Mike, it's good to see you alive and whole.
Huh?
Mike, the Air Express came, and then we got a phone call saying you were hurt and to come quick, and we ran out, and I forgot the package. It's stolen.
Holy, you're the oldest trick in the book. Now what'll I tell Newton?
Nothing, just hand him the package. Here it is.
Faraday, in your pocket?
Yeah, sure. I grabbed it when we tore out.
You knew it was a fake call, and you let me go on worrying.
I'd like to know who made that call.
It was a woman's voice.
Mrs. Newton. She tried to get the package before.
Maybe. I talked to Mr. Newton on the lobby phone here. He said he'd be down in a minute.
Did he tell you what this hide-and-seek is all about?
No. I think he was holding a conference in his room. One of the men we saw him with him at the depot got out of the elevator.
Then you're waiting for Newton now?
Yeah, if he ever goes down.
Well, let's go up to his room and talk to him.
Yeah, I'd like to know what's on the fire myself.
I suppose that... Okay, it's room 911.
Well, come on, Mike. The elevators are this way.
Yes, and so is Mrs. Newton. She just stepped out of one.
Yeah. Uh-oh, let's not tangle with her again.
Amen. There she's going through that arcade. All right, kids, let's make an end run for it.
Here it is, Mike. Number 911.
The key is on the outside of the door.
I will be so glad when we get rid of this package. It's hexed.
No answer. Suppose we might stick our heads inside?
Go ahead. I've got the authority.
Mr. Newton. Mr. Newton, it's Mike Shane.
Well, he must have gone downstairs.
Hey, what's that noise?
Come on, let's find out. I don't see anybody. Uh-oh. On the sofa.
Mike, is he?
Useless question, don't you think? Pillow over his face, or what used to be a pillow, it's blown inside out.
Stuck the gun into the pillow and used it as a silencer. Is that your man, Newton?
Must be. Yeah, I can still recognize him.
Yeah, but this man's dead, and we heard sounds.
Here he is.
Where? Tied up with bed sheets and gagged.
Slugged a couple of times, too. Here, give me a hand, Mike.
Yeah, you bet. Hey, I know him. This is one of the guys who came out of the depot with Newton.
Yeah, he's not tied very tight. Let's get that gag out of his mouth.
Oh, thank heavens. I was choking.
Can you stand up?
I think so. Oof. Dizzy. You hit me so hard.
Who are you?
Carl Stanton. Frank's business partner.
You, were Mr. Stanton.
You mean... Then he did it?
Very thoroughly. You know who did it?
There were two of them. A man and a woman. She called him George.
That's it, Mike. The other two who were with Newton at the depot.
Yes. Frank wired me to meet him there. They were with him. Had guns and said they'd kill us if we called for help.
That explains why Newton gave us the brush off at the station.
We didn't dare make a sign. They forced Frank to come to the hotel and get this room. They made him phone a detective. I guess it was you, sir. Bring the necklace here.
You mean there's jewelry inside his package?
A diamond necklace. Cost Frank $42,000.
Ooh.
And he sent it to me because he knew these two were after it.
Oh, confound it. They've cut the phone wires. I have to go downstairs to call headquarters.
Just a minute, Faraday. Let's get a description of the two so you can broadcast an alarm.
Don't worry, I intend to. Now look, give us the whole story while you're about it, Mr. Stanton.
Well, Frank bought the necklace in Chicago for his wife. These people got on the train there, he said. They became so friendly, got suspicious. He sneaked off the train at Reno and shipped the necklace to Mr. Shane.
Well, somehow they must have figured out the trick.
Well, they found the Air Express receipt in Frank's wallet. So they made him come to the hotel and then phone the detective. The red-headed girl said she was going downstairs to the drugstore, but she didn't come back, and the other one got awfully excited. He said she was double-crossing him.
Well, she made that phony call. She went to our building, watched for the express truck, and then tricked us, huh?
Probably. Go on, Mr. Stanton.
Well, this fella lost his head. Said he'd blow our brains out if we didn't give him money. We were to call a messenger here to the room with all our company cash. I tried to sneak the gun away from him, and, well, that's the last I knew.
Uh-huh. He slugged you, tied you up, then killed Newton. He really went haywire.
I'll get it. I'll answer it.
Is Mrs. Newton in?
Well...
Come on in.
Well, I didn't expect to find so many... Good Lord, Frank.
Yeah, murdered. Couple of jewel thieves.
What did you want?
Why, I was to meet Mrs. Newton here.
What for?
I'm her attorney, Warren Wilson. We're going to discuss Edna's divorce and property settlement with him.
Looking out for her interests very carefully, aren't you, Wilson?
Somebody has to, the way you're milking the company.
That's a lie. If anybody was milking it, it was Frank. $42,000 for a string of diamonds.
You mean the company bought the necklace?
It did. Frank phoned me from Chicago for the money. I told him it would take all our cash we had in the bank.
Just a minute. Mr. Wilson, is this the first time you've been to this room?
Certainly.
We found the key on the outside of the door. Why, anybody could unlock it and come in.
Right. What about Mrs. Newton? We saw her come out of the elevator.
Yeah, but Mike, Mr. Stanton didn't mention her. Of course, he was unconscious. Wouldn't know.
Phil, you looked up Newton's house phone. You remember the street number?
Yeah.
Let's get going. I want to swap one diamond necklace for one piece of information.
Send a cop up to the room, will you, Mike? I'm going down to headquarters and broadcast a pickup for the Chicago paper.
Okay, but don't talk the newspapers yet or you'll be sorry.
What do you wish to see me about, Mr. Shane?
The Air Express package just came, Mrs. Newton. We understand it's for you.
May I have it, please?
Certainly. Here you are.
Thank you.
Your eyes are red, Mrs. Newton. Is there something wrong?
Why, no. I'm just upset. I'm getting a divorce.
Warren Wilson is your attorney, I believe.
Oh, I suppose Frank has set you on his trail.
Gentleman seems very interested in protecting your financial interests.
I don't believe that concerns you.
Excuse me. By the way, I saw you in the lobby of the Fairfax Hotel a while ago. Did you talk over the divorce with your husband?
Yes.
How did he take it?
Mr. Shane, if you came here to pry into my private affairs...
I came here, Mrs. Newton, to tell you that your husband is dead.
He's dead? Who did it?
I didn't say he was murdered.
Oh, no, of course not. I just assumed from the way you spoke...
As a matter of fact, he was shot to death.
Yes, they're looking for the killers right now. 2 jewel thieves followed Mr. Newton from Chicago.
Oh, well, then it was for this... It's my anniversary present.
That's a pretty costly one for a man who was going to leave you.
Well, if I'd only known. We were in Chicago, and I told Frank I wanted some diamonds for our 15th anniversary. He said no. We quarreled, and I came home without him.
This attorney, Warren Wilson, he wanted you to get a divorce, didn't he?
Well, he said it was my only protection, that Frank and Carl Stanton were robbing the company, and Warren was worried about my property.
Which, of course, he would be glad to protect if he married you.
Oh, never. I told him so. I respect him as an attorney, but as a man, a husband, no.
He's probably heard that women change their minds. That would pay off even as executor of your husband's estate.
You mean Warren might have... Oh, no, he couldn't be smart enough to use a pillow.
Mike.
No. I guess he wouldn't, Mrs. Newton. In fact, it's pretty ingenious for a woman.
I didn't do it. I swear I didn't. I opened the door, and Frank was on the couch, and I just turned and ran, and I didn't know what to do. I was afraid to tell anybody. What would the police say?
Oh, that's easy to find out, Mrs. Newton. Put on your hat and coat, and we'll go down to headquarters.
Height 5'3", weight 105, red hair.
Bottle, Phil. Turn it up, will you?
Repeating, pick up man and woman, George Highland, alias Slip Doyle. Age 36, height 5'9", weight 155, blonde hair. Woman, Gwen Evans, alias Clara Bloomberg. Age 26, 28, height 5'3", weight 105, red hair. Warning, they are killers.
Well, Faraday got a real description of the two.
Stanton must have identified them from police photographs.
Well, then what's the sense of dragging me in? They're the ones. They killed Frank.
Now, did they, Mrs. Newton? I wouldn't be known.
Mike, that coupe behind us.
Yeah?
I saw it park across the street when we rang Mrs. Newton's doorbell.
You sure of it?
I'm positive.
Okay, I'll turn at this corner and see what happens.
Yeah, it's still behind us, Mike. It weren't so dark, I could see who's driving. Wait a minute, the street lamp.
Yeah, I caught it in the rear vision. His pal, Georgie, alias Slip Joy.
The killer!
He's alone in the car.
Oh, he's after my necklace. He's after me.
He's after all three of us. Mike, head for a police station.
Save our necks and lose? We're heading for the office of Shane Detective Agency.
Mike, you're plain crazy.
Maybe. We'll decide that after the trap is set.
Oh, fine, if we're still alive to decide anything.
We'll return to Mike and Phyllis in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, the entire weight of your automobile rides directly on the wheel bearings. Now, wheel bearings are round, must revolve rapidly, and yet support the heavy weight of the car. Because of this concentrated pressure, and because they are also liable to damage from brake dust, grit, and water, the front wheel bearings need the best possible lubrication. Failure to keep these bearings properly lubricated may result in expensive repairs requiring parts now hard to get. Your neighborhood Union Oil Minuteman knows this. That's why he takes such pains to do a thorough job of lubricating the front wheel bearings. First, he washes out all the old grease and dirt with solvents. Then the bearings and braces are individually cleaned until they are dry and shiny. Finally, the clean, polished bearings are replaced in the races and greased with special equipment to make certain that every surface is snugly sealed in a thick coating of Union Oil wheel bearing grease. Then your front wheels are all set for months of well-lubricated, easy rolling. The cost for the entire service of your front wheel bearing assembly is nominal. So for safer, easier driving, just stop in wherever you see the sign of the big orange and blue 76 and take advantage of Union Oil's front wheel bearing service. Thank you. Mike thinks he has a plan to capture the murderer who is trailing him. With Phyllis and Mrs. Newton, he is just entering his office.
Turn on the lights, Phil.
Yeah. Mike, this room, it's been ransacked.
Sure. Except Doyle's red-headed girlfriend, that fake phone call you got, remember?
Well, he'll be here any second, Mr. Shane, by the next elevator.
Phil, you get into your office. Do exactly as I told you.
Okay, all right, but this better work good.
And lock your door from the other side.
Oh, Mr. Shane, the man's desperate. He'll kill us, I know.
I don't think so. If he sees I'm unarmed.
So is my husband.
Good evening. Do you always enter with your hat on and a gun on your hand?
I saw three of you get out of the car. Where's the girl?
Bill? She went down the hall. She went down the hall.
Maybe. Or maybe she's in the next room. Locked. You.
Why?
Hand over the necklace.
Well, I haven't got it. Really, I haven't. Mr. Shane,
he's got it. All right, Shane.
Sorry. I'm fresh out of diamonds, too. Wasting your time, pal. No diamonds in that desk. Your red-headed Valentine gave this place the frisk hours ago.
Dirty little double-crosser. You've got the necklace here somewhere. I saw you go into that house with the package and come out again with it.
Grandma, what big eyes you got.
I'll give you 10 seconds. I'd hate to spoil your nice carpet with a lot of blood.
Oh, don't.
Well, I can have the carpet cleaned. And I'll have to unless you hand me your gun right now.
What are you giving me?
You got a good pair of eyes, chum, but you don't raise them high enough. Next time you test a locked door, look up at the transom.
Huh? It's open.
And that gun's sticking right through at it.
And it's aimed right at your heart, mister.
Thank you.
Got some bad news for you, kids. I just talked with ballistics.
What do they say?
Slip Doyle's gun hasn't been fired for some time.
What did I tell you? I didn't do it.
Well, maybe he used the girl's gun.
We'll have to wait on that. They just picked her up over in Oakland.
He might have used another gun. We know he threatened to kill Newton.
Well, I was just bluffing. He and that other guy knew it. He said I'd be scared of the noise. I told him there wouldn't be any. I'd stuff a pillow in his face and shove the gun into it, but I didn't kill him.
No, you just got bored with the whole thing. You walked out leaving two guys to turn in the alarm.
Oh, I locked them in.
That's the catch. The key was on the outside of the door. Anybody could walk in and do the job.
Okay, then I'd pick Newton's wife.
She's in the next room with Stanton and that attorney, isn't she?
Yeah, let's have a talk with him. And you're coming too, Slip.
Well, all cleared up. Can we go now?
Not yet. We're not dead sure this is the killer.
What? But you all said he was.
You might have that honor, Mrs. Newton. You tried to cover up the fact that you were in that hotel room.
But I explained that.
Maybe. But you sure had blood in your eye when you left our office this afternoon.
Preposterous. It's this jewel thief, undoubtedly.
Or perhaps an attorney who tried to get Mrs. Newton away from her husband.
I was protecting her from Frank and Carl. They were stripping the business.
How very noble of you, Mr. Wilson. However, I agree, it must have been this thief.
Oh, you're all trying to frame me.
Now, wait a minute. Nobody's trying to frame you. You said you threatened to kill Newton. Now he's dead. You said you were going to fire your gun through that pillar. That's how we found it, the exact way.
Say that again, Faraday.
Huh?
Never mind. Have we been slow? Remember when you and Phil found me in the lobby? I said I saw the Chicago guy going out of the lobby?
Yeah, sure.
That was before I talked to Frank Newton on the desk phone.
Well, then Newton was still alive when Slip Doyle left the hotel.
I told you so.
Slip Doyle made the threats. He told exactly how he'd kill Newton, but he didn't follow through. There was one other person, the only other one in the room, to hear the threat and to carry it out in detail.
Carl Stanton.
What? Right. Like a cinch. The jewel thief was a perfect fall guy.
No, you're wrong.
I told you Carl was stealing from the company. With Newton out of the way, he could lay all the blame on his partner.
Right. So the two crooks had a falling out.
That's why Stanton was tied up so sloppy. He did it himself. Okay, I'll send a man to the hotel to find his gun. That'll cinch it.
It's cinched right now. We've got the motive, we've got Doyle's testimony, we've got our own.
You'll never convict me. I'll kill myself.
I don't think you will, Mr. Stanton. They tell me the suicide rate in the county jail is very low.
You don't have to see me to my door, Mike. I'm not afraid of the dark anymore.
Please, Angel, allow me one little touch of Irish gallantry.
Oh. All right. Here we are. If I can just find my keys.
Phil.
Hmm?
Faraday told me how busted up you were when you thought I was injured. The best boss, the best guy who ever lived.
Oh, well, Faraday is an old gossip. You know better than to believe his stories. Oh, jeepers, these keys are here somewhere.
If I had been injured, dear, what would you have done?
Oh, I'd come down to the hospital and kiss you, make you well.
You were, huh? Kiss me, huh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, here are my keys. Well, good night, Mike.
Oh!
What? What's the matter? What's wrong?
Oh, I'm hurt. I just bit my lip.
Tune in again next week at 8:30 for another adventure with Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis, with Joe Forte as Inspector Faraday. Ed McDonald substituted for Wally Mayer, whose appearance was prevented by illness. Tonight's story was written by Richard DeGraff and based on the character created by Brett Halliday. Music was composed and directed by Bernard Katz. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
That's case closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with more murder at relicradio.com. In between now and then, you can find past episodes of this show, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your donations make this all possible. Thank you very much to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.